Once a month, my dogs get a box filled with special surprises. Inside are two or three healthy treats and two or three unique dog toys. I'm talking about BarkBox. Starting at $21 a month for the big dog box, BarkBox delivers a box full of joy right to my front door. You can get a one-month subscription, which is one BarkBox, six-month or 12-month subscriptions. Shipping is free inside the contiguous United States. When you're a new subscriber and use our special link, BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ, BarkBox will donate $25 to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Remember, BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. Treat your dog while helping a greyhound still waiting for a home. Welcome to About Greyhounds, the podcast about greyhounds. This is Jacqueline Howard of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. And today is a beautiful day, so we are actually recording this episode outside. We are among, Patty, how many dogs are we surrounded by?
Oh, Jacqueline, that's a secret.
She doesn't even know how many. We are in Patty's beautiful, beautiful backyard. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 that I can see. Does that sound right, Patty?
Or 9 sounds good.
Oh, boy. So we're not exactly sure how many, but beautiful, beautiful greyhounds and one gorgeous galgo who are sharing the yard with us today. So if you hear birds or maybe a bark or two, it's Patty's fault. So, and I am, of course, talking about Patty Comerford, also of Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Patty is on our executive board and serves in the role of secretary. If you've been listening to the podcast, you have heard her voice many times in other episodes. So let's say you just got some great news. You've been approved to adopt a greyhound. You know which lucky greyhound will be yours, and you'll be picking up your dog in a few days. You've also read Retired Racing Greyhounds for Dummies, which is a book Greyhound Friends highly recommends to new adopters. And you've also read all the information on Greyhound Friends of New Jersey's website, which is gfnj.org. And there's one of those dogs I told you about. You're all set, right? Maybe. Let me tell you a story. The day I was released from the hospital's maternity ward with our first baby, Al and I looked at each other when we got outside, and we literally said, now what? We read all the baby books, got all sorts of wanted and unwanted advice from family and friends. We were well educated on the subject, but the question remained, now what? Did you just hear me comparing adopting a greyhound to bringing home a new baby? I guess I did, but here's why. When you get into your car to drive home with your sparkling new greyhound, the same question may just come to your lips. Now what? In this episode of About Greyhounds, we'll help you answer just that. So, if anyone knows anything about bringing a new greyhound home, it's Patty Comerford. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
Patty, talk to me about what should go on in my home before my new greyhound arrives.
That's a very good question, Jacqueline, and there are several parts to that answer. One part is getting the supplies that you need, because it's always good to have everything ready. You're going to get food, and Greyhound Friends recommends Taste of the Wild, the salmon and sweet potato, which is comparable to Costco's Nature's Domain. Fortunately for all of us, Costco's Nature's Domain is less expensive.
Yeah, I also just want to add there that it's grain-free.
Oh.
Which is good to know. I don't know that necessarily all greyhounds need grain-free, but it doesn't hurt.
Good. I didn't know that. So you have your food, and then you have raised bowls. There is some discussion lately about not raising dogs' bowls, but what happens with that is in a few years they'll come back and say, yes, you should raise their bulls. So if you look at a greyhound, a raised bull kind of makes sense. You should have at least one bed, but we all know greyhounds need more than one bed. So I would get a couple of them.
Or they'll be in your bed.
That's exactly it. If you have room for a crate, we recommend a crate. A baby gate, because you at some point in time will want to keep them in a confined area. A coat, because they are thin-skinned and they get cold easily in the cold weather. A brush or a comb, because you're going to want to groom them. A toothbrush and toothpaste, because you're going to want to keep their teeth clean. And, not that we want to go there, but we will, some type of cleaner, because we know that those accidents sometimes happen. So those are the supplies you're going to get. Then the other thing you're going to do is you're going to think about how your family is going to handle the dog. And as a family, you're going to come up with a set of rules. Are you going to let your greyhound on the couch or not? As a family, you need to make that decision, and then you all need to be consistent with whatever your decision is. You're going to want to come up with the same command words. Are you all going to say come? Are you going to say come front or come here? Are you going to use the word no or, you know, stop it? So family decisions need to be made.
And Patty, if I can add to that, what I tell people in the realm of disciplining the dog is into something he or she shouldn't be. Don't use the dog's name when disciplining the dog, because then they associate that name, their own name, with being in trouble. When you say a dog's name, you want that dog usually to come to you.
Yes.
Or to do something positive. So if you use the name when, like if you say, Spot, quit doing that. Like, they're going to associate that name with being in trouble, and that's just such a negative, and the dog won't come to you.
Exactly. Good point. So that, as your family is going to make a decision, and then you're all hopefully going to abide by that. And then you're going to join the Greyhound Friends Facebook page and Twitter. You're going to set up a wellness visit for your new pet. And the reason we do that is, one, it's nice for your vet to have contact with your new greyhound when they're not sick, when they're in good health. And it's good for your dog not to have to go to the vet when they're not feeling well, when they're in good health as well. And because there have been problems with worms in dogs, and although your greyhound is wormed when you get him, sometimes they need to be wormed again. So it's always good to set up a visit a week or a couple of days after your greyhound arrives. Bring a stool sample and have your vet test it. And then, of course, you're going to listen to the About Greyhounds podcast.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I hear the host is delightful.
She is, Jacqueline.
Okay. Yeah, and I want to add, Patty, you are the Facebook master, and you do such a great job of monitoring that page. And for anybody that hasn't been on our page, it's a very welcoming page. There really isn't any nasty debating. There may be disagreement with how to do something, but overall, it's a very welcoming, very nice, very helpful community. So if you have questions, you can ask there. Of course, we always ask adopters if they are having issues with their dog to call Linda Lyman, to call you, Patty, call, you know, someone on the board who can help you, because on Facebook you can get some good answers, you can get some not so good answers. But Patty does an excellent job of monitoring that site and making sure that everything is copacetic there. And you know, follow us on Twitter. Just there's a lot of fun stuff going on there. You know, we post a lot of jokes, we'll post current events, we'll tweet out, you know, every Catterday we we tweet out a cat and a greyhound because, you know, why not? It's Catter Day. So definitely great resources to stay current and get information, because Greyhound Friends is an excellent community, and we always have something going on that you'd probably want to know about. Patty, in addition to everything that you just shared that an adopter should have before the dog comes to the home, I'm wondering, would it make sense to have a medical kit on hand that's just for the dog in case of emergencies?
Yes, Jacqueline, that's a good point. You do want to have something. Not that we anticipate that there's going to be emergencies, but it's always good to be prepared. You want to have a medical kit that has things like gauze, saline solution, vet wrap, a thermometer, something to an antibiotic cream.
Yep. So it sounds like basically things that you would have for people.
Exactly.
Like a first aid kit, but it's for the dog. Basically, it's generally the same stuff.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. So here's a question that I hear a lot from prospective adopters. They know that some greyhounds really like to play with dog toys. So should they have dog toys for their dogs before they come?
Yes. And here it's a two-part answer. If this is your only greyhound, many times they will not know how to play with toys. So you will be at some point on the ground showing them how to play with the stuffy. And they will be looking at you like you're nuts. But once they realize what a stuffy is and that it makes a squeaky noise, they probably will start playing with it. There's usually a time lapse when new dogs are somewhat reserved and don't understand quite a few things in the house, and toys happen to be one of those things. So eventually they will understand toys and they will learn how to play with them. If you have a multi-pet house, usually your current dog knows how to play with a toy. So when you're adding a new dog, you want them to have their own toys, but you also want to supervise any toy interaction between the two dogs.
Sure.
Because there can be some competitiveness.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you say that, because one of my greyhounds loves his toys. I mean, this dog has a stockpile like you wouldn't believe, and I even got him a subscription to BarkBox, you know, so we'd get new toys all the time. And I have to say, they've been pretty indestructible so far, and he's like, he's usually one to kill his toys. But my other dog, he doesn't play with toys at all. Like, he just is not interested. And I always say, the dog that likes toys, he should be walking around with like a hayseed sticking out of his mouth, you know. And the other dog who doesn't play with toys, like, I'm pretty sure if he could pick out what he would wear, it would be an ascot with a monocle and some kind of pipe, you know. Like, when the other dog's playing with toys, he looks at him like, oh, that's absurd, you know. Like, he just sneers at it. He can't believe it. So I'm pretty sure he knows how to play with toys. He just has no desire. So sometimes that happens. But you're so right about supervising, because it turns out my dog that loves toys is very toy aggressive. So it works out that the other dog doesn't care. But like you, Patty, we foster. So when fosters come into my home, I have to take all those toys and put them away.
Right.
And the only time, and I know he loves the toys, so I'll let him play with the toys when the other dogs aren't around. So maybe I'll throw the toys outside the yard for him to play with, or the other dogs are out in the yard and I'll give him a toy, or maybe he's in my room. I have a baby gate to my bedroom, so I don't have to close the door.
Right.
But he can be in there playing with his toys. But yeah, it's very important to be careful, because you know, some of them are very territorial.
Yes.
About their toys.
Yes. Rooney, one of my fosters, we call her the toys her babies, and she will have a crate full of babies. And nobody had better go in that crate and take those babies away from her.
So she's hoarding the babies.
She's hoarding the babies.
That's funny.
The other toy that I wanted to talk about was getting a Kong, a K-O-N-G, which is a rubber cylinder type of toy that quite often we recommend for adopters that they give their dog when they're in the crate, so when they leave the house. A Kong is has a center that you can fill. And what I always say to people is, we used to say fill it with peanut butter, and then that was just too much peanut butter. So now what we say is put in some biscuits, put in some kibble, put in some type of filler, seal it with peanut butter, stick it in the fridge, freeze it, and then bring it out, give it to your dog in the crate. They'll love that, won't pay any attention to you, and then you can, if you need to, leave the house or do something else.
You know what I always say, Patty? I say, you know, if you're going to go out, give your new greyhound a job.
Yes.
And it's on a recent podcast that we released on separation anxiety. We recommend the Kong with the peanut butter frozen as a way to help the dog, like giving the dog a job, something to do. And it's also funny that you mentioned not putting too much peanut butter in there, because it's going to bound up the dog, and nobody wants that. So
it's too much peanut butter is not a good thing.
Like if it's too much peanut butter for you, it's too much peanut butter for your dog. Great point, Patty. So I have all my supplies. I have my beds, my toys, my raised bowls, my food, all of that. And I go to pick up the dog. So now what?
So you're going to put your dog in the car.
Okay.
Now, if this is, being a greyhound, many of them are used to traveling. But they don't travel in cars. They travel in haulers.
So what do you mean by a hauler?
A hauler is a long, flat vehicle that they use to move dogs from one place to another. When our dogs are brought up from Florida, they're in a hauler. So there are actually compartments where the dogs are. They're called holes. And so they don't have windows. They can't see out the window. They're moving. They know that they're going somewhere, but it's not a car per se. So going in a car might be a first time experience for your new greyhound.
So a hauler, it sounds like from your description, is kind of like a horse trailer, but shorter. I mean, not as tall.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Squatter.
A squatter.
Yeah. Squatter.
Okay, so is there anything I have to do when I put, like, do I just put the dog in my car and he'll sit down, or?
Well, most of them will stand there frozen, not knowing what to do. There are several options for people to keep their dog in place, or else you might have a dog sitting in the front seat with you. So there are gates, there are hammocks, there are restraints such as safety belts, harnesses that you can look into. Until you figure out how your dog travels in a car, you might not want to invest in a lot of those things.
Yeah.
You might just want to wait and see. Always having a second person for their first car ride is probably a good idea, because that second person can help keep them contained if they're trying to get in the front seat with you.
That's a great idea. And what about getting in and out of the car? I guess that's where a second person would come in pretty handy.
You know, you always worry about people opening the hatchbacks of their cars when a greyhound has to come out, or any dog has to come out. Well, first of all, usually the boys don't know how to jump in a car. The girls are better at that, because at the track, the girls are in the top crates, so they have to jump in. The boys are in the bottom crates, so they don't.
Interesting.
So girls are usually better jumpers. Not always, but usually.
That explains a lot, actually. Okay.
So with the boys, what you want to do is bring them up to the car, see if they'll jump in. If they won't, you pick up their front feet, put their front feet in the back.
Yep.
And then scoop your hand underneath their tuck behind their stomach and lift them in. And then close the back as soon as you can. I always just for me, because I feel it's safer. Rather than opening the back hatch, I always feel it. I have more control if I open the side door of my car to get the dogs out. Somehow, when you open the hatch, you're always kneeling down, saying "Wait!" and trying to catch their leashes. I find opening the side door, I'm on the same level as they are, and it's easier for me to just grab their leashes.
Yeah. What I do in my car, well, actually, let me back up a little. I just want to tell you a charming story about what happened to me one time going down the New Jersey Turnpike, which for those not in New Jersey, it is a 12-lane superhighway. And I'm quite comfortable driving on it. I drive on it every day to go to work and, and to go to our kennel. You know, it's a great road, but it is it's a super highway. So I'm going down the turnpike with a new foster, and my car, I call it my dog car, because my other car's a mini and I'm not going to fit. I barely fit in there. But anyway. My other car, the dog car, it's called a crossover. So it's not quite a minivan, thank goodness, but it's also not quite an SUV.
Right.
So basically, it looks like a glorified station wagon. And at the time, I would put the dog, the foster dog, when I picked them up at the kennel, in the back of the hatch, where the dog could lay down and be comfortable. But I'm going down the superhighway, the New Jersey Turnpike, and I'm confessing that I was doing 85 miles an hour.
And, which is typical on the turnpike.
Well, you kind of have to. Yeah. It's not the Autobahn, but if you don't want to get an accident, do 85.
Yes.
So I'm doing 85 going down the 12-lane highway, and I look in my rearview mirror just to see, you know, make sure the dog's still laying down in the back. And I glanced up in my mirror just in time to see her climbing over the driver's seat. So she'd already gotten to the middle row, and now she's climbing over me, 85 miles an hour. Luckily, I was close to a rest area, which we have a lot of on the New Jersey Turnpike. And I was able to get her under control and not get killed. So that was really good. Another thing I want to mention, I learned this from an adopter who is not only new to dogs, but brand new to greyhounds. And she recently adopted one of my fosters. And as I always do, I walk people out to their car and help them get the dog in the car. Well, actually, Al does that. I just look. It's not that useful. So, and this lady, she opened the door. The dog actually did jump right into the back seat. And then she took the leash and she did a slip knot, which is, you know, basically like the Linda Lyman loop that we often talk about, and put that over the headrest.
Oh, what a good idea.
And I was like, that's what I said. I said, I've never seen anybody do that. She's like, oh, somebody gave me this tip.
Right.
You know, now, like, she can't go very far if she jumps out. Like, I mean, the dog wouldn't get strangled if she jumped out of the car. The leash is long enough.
Right.
But it kept her, you know, so that when they were putting her in the car, and then when they got home to let her out of the car, they will keep complete control. So I thought that was
that is a good tip.
Yeah, yes. Really neat idea. Yeah. So, and I'll put in the description of this podcast, I think I'll put a video. I will put a video of doing that so people can see, you know, exactly what I mean by doing a slip knot over the headrest.
Good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're always learning, Patty. Because like I said, I never said, I was like, woo! You know, I can hear angels singing, like, oh, I've learned something. It's so great, because sometimes I am alone with my dogs. And, you know, if I'm taken to the vet or I do meet and greets or whatever, you know, Al's not always with me. And often I'm alone. So it was great to see that.
Something new.
Yeah. Okay, so I get home with my new dog. I have another dog.
Right.
What's the first thing I should do?
Well, when you adopt from Greyhound Friends, you are given a muzzle for your new dog. And our hope is that you have a muzzle for your other Greyhound. If it's not a Greyhound, then you might not have a muzzle. But if you have a Greyhound, we hope that you have a muzzle for them. The bottom line is remain calm. Don't get sure. overexcited with all of this. What you want to do is remember that this is a brand new experience for your new dog. You want to stay nice and calm.
Sure.
Don't use the high-pitched
baby
voice that just sets my teeth on edge, because it overexcites dogs unnecessarily.
It's a horrible thing.
Yes. Do not go there.
Especially around us.
Yes.
I'll baby really. Voice you right back.
Remain calm. So what you want to do is you want to introduce your dogs in a neutral area.
Okay.
And for most of us, that is taking a walk on the street. You don't want to use your backyard, because that is the territory of your current dog. You want to use someplace that they can both meet each other. Nobody owns it, and they can walk together nicely.
Does a backyard work for that?
I would say no, only because the backyard is your current dog's territory.
Okay.
So really, the optimal place is to walk in the street.
Okay.
If you can't, a backyard is fine. But if you're able to, there's two of you, walk in the street.
Got it. Completely neutral.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Your dogs are muzzled, because we want everybody to be safe. And you're, as I said, calm is the rule. You're also not going to push anything. You're not going to think that they're going to be best buddies the minute they walk together into the house. You know, your new dog is overwhelmed. They are not used to many things. They are not used to, if they're right off the track, being in a house. They have lived a very regimented life, and a house is not part of it. So everything is overwhelming to them, and you just need to give them space and give them time. So you're going to muzzle, remain calm, give it time. Don't let anybody get overexcited. You're not going to invite the neighbors over to have a welcome home new dog picnic. because that does not lead to calmness.
No parades.
No parades.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay, got
no
it.
Parades. Although we can hear the fire trucks in the background.
It's the beauty of being outside.
Exactly. And you're not going to give any toys, bones, or food. A new dog won't understand a lot of that. Your old dog will be possessive.
Sure.
So you don't need to introduce that immediately. And what I do is I basically bring them into the house and I take a nap. Because to me, I'm giving them the impression of everything's nice, everything's calm, nothing's bothering me, nothing should bother you.
Yep.
And I let them decide where they want to lay down.
Yep.
And usually where they land is where they feel safest. So whether or not it's in the kitchen, if it's near the stairs, if it's a place where they can see everything and be out of the way, whatever works for them, I don't say, this is your bed, you have to go lie in it. I let them decide.
That makes sense. And I should add that Patty and I, as I've mentioned, foster, and we are always bringing new dogs into the house, sometimes two at a time. In Patty's case, what, 20 at a time? But
already
yeah,
added
so
time.
So it's a ritual that, you know, Patty and I are very, very used to. And you're so right. You know, just stay calm. They meet most of the time that when I have my dogs meet a new foster or fosters, it's sniff, 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 and that's it. Like,
exactly.
You know, everyone just kind of falls in line. And my dogs at this point anyway are very used to dogs, as I'm sure you are, coming in and out. And then, you know, staying calm. Like you said, just go about your business,
right.
You know, and you're sending a signal to that dog. Everything's fine. Just like you said, you're absolutely right.
The other thing why you want to introduce them outside is, especially with boys, have a tendency to mark their territory. And if they're outside, they, as I call it, use up their ammunition. and don't have a whole lot left in the tank when they get into your house.
Okay, that is hilarious. And you know, Patty, I've always introduced the dogs outside. I never thought of it, but now that you say it, yeah, like the foster dog will go around the perimeter of my yard, just marking it. And then my dogs, who are both males, they are marching behind him, and you know, one will mark and the next one. So like this poor spot gets hit three times by these boys. That's funny.
So by the time they go in your house, you hope that they don't have any urine left to mark your house. But if they do, it's okay. You clean up, you don't yell, and hopefully that will be their one instance of marking in your house.
Yeah, I've noticed with the ones that do it, and not all of them do, it's a once and done deal. They never do it again. So I don't, you know, I clean it up right away and don't worry. You know, I don't worry like, oh my God, he's not house trained, because most of the time they are. I do want to touch on another type of introduction. So there are greyhounds, many of them in fact, that get along with small animals, including cats. And I have cats. My cats are indoor cats only, because of where I live. And believe it or not, I actually have a fear of like a big bird taking my cats. Well, because we have turkey vultures, which do carry cats away. And although, you know, maybe that wouldn't be a bad thing. Just kidding. Don't tell my cats I said that. And, you know, we have... you know, there's, we have foxes, like we have all sorts of things. I do not let my cats out. So no, I'm not going to take them outside to meet the dog in a neutral area. And, my cats are very used to my dogs. And all of the cats that I have now, the greyhounds were there first. So, so here's what we do. Greyhound friends cat test the dogs. They're also cat tested at the track before they even come to us. So they've already gone through two testing periods. Still, compared to a cat, greyhounds are very big. They're very fast. They have very big teeth. They're dogs. You can be pretty confident after being tested twice by professionals that they'll be fine. Be careful, because dogs and cats are unpredictable. So, what you want to do when you introduce the cats is muzzle the greyhounds, have the dog on a leash, take them to wherever the cat is, and just show them the cat and let the cat see the dog. If the dog tries to approach the cat beyond the way how close you've let the dog get to that cat, you say, "Hey," and pull the leash gently but quickly, like towards your hip. So it's like a quick, "Hey," you know, by pulling the leash, you're just kind of like taking him out of that zone. And do that a few times if you have to, no more than that. After that, just take the dog away from the cat. Remember, most raising greyhounds, except for when they were tested, have never seen a cat. What is this thing? You know, it smells different, it looks different, it acts different, it's different. And of course they're interested in looking at this new thing and smelling it. Of course they are. Like, wow, what is that thing? Most of them aren't doing it because they want to eat the cat. They're doing it because they're curious. They just don't know what that is. So, and the other thing I would say, keep the dog when you have cats muzzled for at least a few days, except when they're eating and drinking, to make sure that that your cat stays safe. The other thing, we talk about baby gates a lot. I have baby gates in my house that keep the cats and dogs separate, although I will say my cats are free to roam the entire house. But the dogs can't get into certain areas of the house, so the cats have safe zones. There's high zones. There's high zones all over the house where the dogs had to chime in about cats, and most of the dogs here do not like cats, and they're just voicing that. So anyway, every room in my house has a high place where the dogs, sorry, not the dogs, where the cats can jump up if they had to. But for the most part, I've had no problems with the cats and the dogs and the fosters. This is Jacqueline, and I am going to end part one of this two-part episode right here. Be sure to tune in next week to hear the second half of my conversation with Patty Comerford, where we talk about the things you should know before you bring home a greyhound for the first time. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.